Like Call It What You Want, which we know is your favorite podcast about the beautiful game, Vuori is committed to delivering a great experience for everyone, which is highlighted by their new perspective on performance apparel. Everything is designed to work out in, but doesn't look or feel like it. In fact, I'm rocking their Stratotech polo right now, along with their Sunday performance jogger pants, so I can be business on top when I'm on camera, but super comfortable on the bottom. And it's just the best. Vuori gear is incredibly versatile, and it can be used for just about any activity. Running, training, swimming, lounging around, hosting podcasts, doing errands, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. And for our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/call it. That's Vuori.com/call it. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Go to Vuori.com/call it and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Everybody, welcome to In Soccer We Trust. It is me, Heath, Hollywood Heath Pierce, and Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, and we've got ourselves a pretty fun show because we've now had a few days to reflect a little bit, gain a little bit more perspective, and we're going to talk about player rankings, grades, the overall perspective of this national team. Were we too harsh? Were we too soft? Were we a little bit too emotional at times? We're going to get into all of that, but first, Charlie, how you feeling on this, what is it, Monday? Monday yeah, morning. Seriously. That's crazy, man. I'm so lost in this tournament for a few weeks now that I don't even know what day it is. But I'm back in Dubai now. I had a chance to go to the France against Poland game. And wow. How you doing? I'm going to give you a few thoughts on that. But first, mm-hmm. want to see how you're doing.
I'm doing well. I'm excited to watch the rest of this tournament play out. I've had some time to decompress. I know we're going to get into that, to really think about what the U.S. men's national team's mission truly was, and how did they look to us? Did they impress? Did they move forward? Do we think their performances are going to help this group as they move into the next cycle? Who do we think sticks around? Who's still growing? Ultimately, to kind of achieve even higher success and a higher level at the club. Front. So I'm feeling good. I'm optimistic. I'm hopeful. There's a lot of positives that have come away from this World Cup tournament from the U.S.
Well, that's well said. And we're going to get into all that. But just to give a little bit of a recap of my trip, I flew. They're doing like 60 flights a day from Dubai to Doha. I flew super easy. You fly into the old airport, spent the day walking around Doha. Pretty quiet, to be honest. There's like an old souk area, which is like kind of like your outdoor bazaar that most of the fans that were still around kind of gather around 3-4 o'clock, similar to other World Cups. There was kind of just this like point that everybody would meet, but it was relatively quiet. I went to the game and obviously got to witness Mbappe in his purest form of just scoring absolutely outrageous goals, and Giroud that overhead kick that was obviously called back because of the foul, but and his goal too, just an overall like unbelievable individual moments. But I gotta say, man, the atmosphere inside the stadium was like an ICC tournament in the U.S. That's what it felt like. There was at no point did I feel the magnitude of one of these teams is going home. It just felt like almost like a friendly. And again, this isn't an attack on Qatar, because we've had plenty of our say on what that is. It's just the type of fan that was in the stadium, right? It was mostly neutral fans there to watch the game, be entertained. And it wasn't so much like I remember from Russia when I went to Argentina, Nigeria, or I went to Mexico, Germany, where you just felt like, man, these are two fan bases that are so loud. They're competing in the stands in the same way they're competing on the field. So that part was a disappointment. But getting a chance to see Mbappe score, getting a chance to see Lewandowski score on his second chance on a penalty was a pretty pretty great experience. And then overall, I didn't really feel a whole World Cup vibe. You're obviously in the knockout rounds. I walked the Corniche, which is the waterfront of the city, and it was just kind of festival-like. It wasn't really World Cup-like, but I mean, maybe that would be the same in any country in this region. But yeah, overall, a little underwhelming, but super easy travel, super easy to get into the stadium, super easy experience, very family-friendly. There was no tension or any of that type of stuff.
Didn't you say the Fox setup was by far the best and biggest? Or would you not, best, but definitely the biggest?
I mean, I only walked the Corniche, right? Which is everybody has that sort of bay view of all the big the high rises or the skyline, so to speak, in Qatar. So everybody kind of has their setup facing that on the Corniche, which is again this long waterfront kind of walk where they have different areas along the way. They have a bus kind of picking up, dropping off all the way down, a fan festival in that area. But I was Jimmy had been texting me the day before yesterday saying, hey, come on by here. Come by the Fox area. We're going to be there in a little bit. But when I walked, I just kept walking and walking and walking and never got there. Today, I walked the entire thing all the way into the sort of West Bay area where the skyscrapers are and saw theirs. And it's like this island out and it's like almost like this gigantic house out on the edge of the water. Everybody else had sort of these your designated booth, similar to Russia when you're overlooking the Kremlin or some of the other areas that you're overlooking with the broadcast booths. And it was just kind of two studios, and I saw Fox taped and plastered onto all over it. So I'm assuming that's what it was. It looked like some of the things that I've seen. Obviously, I've been in Dubai, so I've mostly only had access to be in sport on the occasion. I have some access to Fox, and so from what I could tell, that's the one, and it was huge, and it was massive, and it was the biggest one that I had seen. Other than most of them were like, you're in like these almost like stages built into the sky that are built out of nothing. This was actually a pre-manufactured building that was already there that they seemed to take over for the broadcast, and so pretty cool to see. I didn't get a chance to see any of them, obviously, because of the timing of things, but let's shift the conversation, because I'm talking about having just been to a game and the experience was. Because it's fresh on our minds, let's talk about this Japan-Croatia. Obviously, Japan going out in penalties. When you look at Japan in that first half and the way that they were all over Croatia, right? Mm-hmm. And a Croatian team that's taken some time to get going in this tournament and who we saw went down against Canada and have had their own struggles, but obviously a very well-oiled team and a ton of experience. Does it change the way that you think about our U.S. team and how they struggled against Japan? Because obviously the second half looked different. Croatia settled in, and then you go to the end, and Croatia is able to grind that out in penalties, which, by the way, when you're playing, like, these games are like 2.5 hours long now with stoppage time. And then you go to penalties, like, I mean, no excuses for anybody. But, I mean, what was your overall take of that game and how that relates to the U.S. men's national team?
Well, just Japan are so tactically sound. They have discipline mm-hmm. beyond anything I've ever seen in terms of staying to your position, staying true to your 1v1 duel. For me, I'll be the first to raise my hand and say, I never thought Japan had this much quality in scheduling that friendly ahead of the World Cup. So credit to Japan and to the coach and to the players. And how
I mean,
they
do you remember how
out.
Much, by the way, do you remember how much we were complaining about, oh, we're playing against Japan and Saudi Arabia. Yes. I want to play against Brazil, or I want to play mm-hmm. against another World Cup European team.
Don't get me wrong. I still would have liked to have played Brazil or France or Argentina, a team that is considered to be the favorite to win. But that was a very healthy exercise, and I think an important one, because we learned a lot about how to play out of the back. And if we didn't have that game, Aaron Long is most likely starting with Tim Ream. With Walker Zimmerman. And Tim Ream may not be coming in, but because we saw some real deficiencies with how we were organized, how we played out of the back, that forced Greg Berhalter to bring in more experience, to bring in someone who's playing every week, someone in form. That was Tim Ream. And Tim Ream was the best center back we had throughout the World Cup, which is incredible to see.
Well, let me ask you this. While I'm looking up this tweet that we had gotten, somebody was basically saying that this was bad management from Greg Berhalter because Ream wasn't part of this. Oh, can we reconcile how Ream and Sargent became key starters after being left out for 12 months? seems to be a blatant mismanagement of the team and severe error in player evaluation. And to cap it off, putting Gio in a new spot when 0-2 down. Now, the Gio thing, by the way, I think we are giving Gio too much credit right now.
Mm-hmm.
Gio got on the field and struggled the same way that everybody else did in that game, you know, in terms of having that X factor, was trying to do a lot. I mean, he was trying to be busy. And so I'll leave that one to the side. But in terms of mismanagement, I just wanted to address this real quick. You just made a very good point that the U.S. losing to Japan in the way that they did led to Ream starting. Mm-hmm. And if anything, that is management. That is the recognition of saying, I want us to be able to play in a few different ways and look a few different ways. And when I tried that with the team that I had, we failed, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at the last couple of years and people are like, yeah, but we've been giving starts and caps and everybody to everybody. But like, did you really need Tim Ream? Clearly you didn't need Tim Ream for the last 2 years, right? You used those 2 years to evaluate, see where players were at, give chances to young players. We decided to go with a young group since the beginning of Greg's tenure. So do you look at that as a mismanagement? I mean, of course there are mismanagements along the way from any manager, but do you look at that as a mismanagement, or do you look at that as a plus that he's, one, was taking chances on these guys? A lot of people were convinced weren't the right guys, and then was able to recognize before the World Cup, we're not there yet. We don't have the guys that I thought we'd have. They're not in the form that we want. We can't play the way that I want us to be able to play at times. And therefore, I'm going to call on Tim Ream, and he is going to step in and he's going to lead this team.
Yes. I mean, you could look at it from a point of being in my shoes. I got my first opportunity with the national team in 2007. I got another one in 2008. I scored in a World Cup qualifier against Trinidad, and that was my first international goal. But it was a game that had no real significance as a World Cup qualifier. But I wasn't ready at those moments. And I had a January camp, and I didn't take it and didn't do well. It wasn't until I finally got another opportunity in a game that most people counted us out against Egypt in the Confederations Cup that it all clicked for me. And so that's not on the manager. That's on the player. I had opportunities. Tim Ream had opportunities, and Josh Sargent had opportunities, and they didn't take it. So how can you all of a sudden say it's the manager's fault for not including them if they didn't perform well, right? So that's what I look at.
And Josh Sargent, by the way, hasn't really been a huge – in the last couple of years, and yes, he had some injuries, hasn't been a huge standout player for the national team. You know, mm-hmm. It's not like he's been this, like, undeniable thing. We saw when he had his best year in Werder Bremen with 9 goals, and then you go through all of last year in the Premier League, and he struggled, right? And so there are some things that go with that. But to me – I'm not giving Greg credit. I'm actually criticizing Greg for a lot of things, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that recognition of I need to get my players from here to here. You know, Tim Ream is already here. Now, do I think that Greg had always had a plan to bring Tim Ream? Absolutely not. I don't think he ever had that plan to bring Tim Ream, but I think Tim Ream's performances and his consistency and his experience started to become glaring, right? Thanks. On the wall, in his eyes, every day of the week, 24 hours a day, going like, you are going to make a fatal error if you don't bring this guy in, because the guys that you have right now who you trusted are not rewarding you with that trust over the last bit of time. And I think that there's a very, very clear distinction in that, because we went with that. And yes, people started saying, well, what about John Anthony Brooks as well? And all these other things. But like the people that were hardest on, they loved Walker Zimmerman, although he had a dip in form throughout this year, but he was sort of the guy, stepped in for a bit. And then Aaron Long and most of the others, other than Chris Richards when he was healthy, were hated by the fans. You know, not hated, but just like thought of as like not up to snuff for a national team starter. And Aaron Long didn't play. And so I think those are moments that we have to look at and say, there was a recognition of, I was hoping to get somebody here, or whatever your reasons are, wasn't working, I'm going to make the change. And mm-hmm. I'm actually happy that we didn't use 2.5 years of Tim Ream in that position, because we've always said, you know exactly what you're going to get from Tim Ream. And he showed it in the World Cup as our best defender.
And we got to see what Miles Robinson developed into. Unfortunately, his Achilles injury took him out of the picture. And then Chris Richards, and you got a chance to see a lot of players. And let's be honest, we're playing in CONCACAF. You can get away with not playing players at a certain level and still get results.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough no matter who you put on that field.
But you can get away. You go to the World Cup, it's a big difference.
You put that third ball to the back post against Netherlands, doesn't get scored on. No one puts that. Mm-hmm. No one hits that ball in CONCACAF and punishes you for not being organized.
And so I think that's where we should move this conversation into what they didn't get right. When you look at Greg Berhalter and the tactics in the first half and getting teams to play and the selection, it got you Wales in the first half, 45 minutes was phenomenal, but you didn't have a nine. Okay. You didn't have no striker really developed until the Iran game. And Sargent wasn't a goal scorer, but he was a facilitator. He's a big reason why we had opportunities and we had possession in the attacking half. So I'm the first person to stand up and give Josh Sargent a round of applause for his performance in that game, because that is the type of all around involvement we need from a nine without the goal scoring. Basically, he did everything else except the goal scoring. And then when you don't have him, to put Jesus Ferreira there makes absolutely no sense, because he's not a striker. His form dipped considerably towards the end of the season. So you throw that into to the picture. And then if you're going to play with John Nine, then might as well play Gio Reyna there or Christian Pulisic there or somebody else who can give you a little bit more than what we saw in that first 45 minutes. And yes, we had an amazing opportunity in the second minute of the game with Christian Pulisic. But you weren't able to build off of that, because you didn't have a player who could be a threat. He was literally a fill-in. That's not what you need in a World Cup. So you look at the depth and the options we didn't have. After Gio Reyna and Brandon Aaronson, there was no goal-scoring threat.
Would you have done this then if you had an opportunity to bring Pepe and PFOC? Would that have changed whether or not you have a nine?
Yes, because when you look at the bench, you're like – And after Aaronson and Reyna went in and we were down 2-1, I was like, okay, who else can we bring in to add some attacking energy? Shaq Moore?
Yeah.
No. Roldan?
Yeah.
No. Aaron Long? No. Luca De La Torre? No. Kellen Acosta? No. Joe Scally? No. So we brought an extra right back, which was not needed. An extra right back. And that's why I get so frustrated when I look at the roster, the 26 men. How does a player like Jordan PFOC not make this roster, playing every week in the Bundesliga as a big striker? We could have used that. Talk about a presence. Now you have a nine with a presence who you could throw up there and you're launching balls in, and that's where he thrives when he has a partner, whether it was Haji Wright, whether it was Christian Pulisic, whoever you could put next to him.
You have that opportunity. Mad?
And Ricardo Pepi, that one makes me mad as well.
Yeah. And did it make you mad when Greg said, we don't have – a Depay who's scoring in the Champions League?
Yes.
Did that trigger Depay you in the sense of knowing that we've got other players, or we have another way of playing that he refused to play because we didn't bring a PFOC, we didn't bring a Pepe. We could have played with Awea up there. I mean, that one bothered me a lot, because it was just like, well, then if you knew that, then what do you want then? Change it.
Well, this is my thing. Depay is not Mbappe. Depay is not Lionel Messi. Or
Cristiano
Ronaldo.
He got a cutback with a free shot 14 yards out.
I would have said, then what is Harry Kane? Then what is Bukayo Saka and Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford? What are they? If they're another level ahead of Memphis Depay, what are we talking about Memphis Depay for? That wasn't what beat us. What beat us was our lack of creativity in the attacking third. That's what beat us. We were so predictable and one-sided that Louis van Gaal said, all right, I'm going to force you to play differently. And let's see how you guys can come up with opportunities outside of how you have up until this point. And we couldn't do it. Memphis Depay has nothing to do with our class. We beat Spain in Confederations Cup. We've competed. This team's competed against England, was a better team over 90 minutes. And England is a favorite. We've seen how they've demolished to get into the quarterfinals. They demolished Senegal. Senegal is a tough team. I don't want to hear anything about Memphis Depay. It's about us. It's about literally our quality.
Well, let's go through the back lines. I mean, let's go through each line. We won't go through individually because I think that's going to, one, take too long, and it's a little bit unfair circumstantially. But let's answer this question real quick of being – to be outplayed as a team is one thing, but to be outcoached is unacceptable was a comment we just had on here. Do you agree with that? Because – there were times that I played in games and I was like, you know, coach definitely got it wrong today, you know, like, because I was out there running around. But at the same time, and I tweeted this after the game, that I wish I wish me as a player would have gotten all of the excuses that I'm seeing right now for the attacks on Greg Berhalter, that it's just like it's all his fault. Because you know also when you're on the field and you've got leaders and you've got captains and you've got just the fluidity of the game, you can also be accountable and responsible for the things in which you do. Now, when your press is off and all those things, that's where it can really fall apart, right? Because one guy goes, and now you're breaking lines, and now everybody's like, man, what's going on? And now we find ourselves down a couple goals. But the timing of it was, had Christian Pulisic been clinical, that could be different. And I know it's like, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's a big chance. It's a massive chance against a team in the knockout rounds.
He rushed it.
He rushed it, right?
Yeah.
And the Netherlands, or when you talk about Depay in the Champions League, those players will punish you. And I do know that we don't have somebody that is going to punish you yet, right? I think we have some budding stars, but we don't have anybody that's like, hey, you give the U.S. a half chance, they're going to bury you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I agree with it on that context. But then when I think about the cutback, that was one, but it's the timing, the amount of goals that I've seen just up to half, including Croatia's goal against Japan that just deflates you. Now Croatia goes into half, take a break. They come out in the second half flying in a different way. They get you to penalties, and now they knock you out. The timing of that goal, it was just killer to me. The timing of the Wales goal, just absolutely killer to me. Do you think that's a coaching thing, or do you think that's a player thing when it comes down to moments like that? And do you think, back to that comment, that it's unacceptable to be outcoached?
Once the team is on the field, the responsibility lies with the players on the pitch. I mean, occasionally, how many times have you seen a coach literally pull a player over and say, hey, run this to the captain, tell him this is what we're doing, we're changing something in the first half? That's rare. Maybe you and throughout the course of the game, especially if you're playing in a loud environment, you're not going to be able to hear the coach anyways. And players don't even want to hear the coach to begin with. So I look at just playing the decision to play Jesus Ferreira and the decision to play Walker Zimmerman, even though it's not that Walker Zimmerman did anything that was a glaring mistake. But I just feel that in that game, when the center backs were, and they obviously didn't know, we're going to be tasked with bringing the ball forward and making the game and trying to play through the lines, because the Netherlands forwards closed out the outside backs and said, okay, come on up, center backs, let's see what you got. And we're going to try and lock down the midfield. We didn't have many ideas, that the movement wasn't there. And then you look at Jesus Ferreira as the nine, that choice. I feel like we kept pushing Tim Weah, playing there. This is a game where you should have done that and played Gio Reyna or Aronson on the right side and see what that brought. I think that energy got fresh legs. You got both of them playing with a chip on their shoulder. They want to play more. So I just think that would have raised the level a little bit. Weston McKennie was very tired. You could see that. You know, is that an opportunity to make a switch there and possibly?
Well, that's why when you talk about Walker Zimmerman, I'm like, yeah, but that MMA through the midfield, if they're sitting back, split your center backs, drop your six underneath, and now you create this 3v2 in that situation, right? Because it's all about just creating that one numerical advantage, and then the next two come in and create those triangulations to be able to solve problems. Now, I'm saying this in real time as if it's that easy, where it's just like, oh, yeah, just drop in, and then you broke the pressure. Like, they – not only did they have a game plan that we weren't ready for, but they executed it consistently over and over again. And the sharpness of the movement and passing and timing that we had seen from our guys that we had been hailing and through our midfield, through the right side, was just off. And it required us to have 6, 7, 8 passes under pressure to break pressure. And we just didn't have that confidence or that belief or that consistency to be able to do that. And for me, that was just a really disappointing part. It still came down to moments, though. It still came down to not tracking runners on a track back from Tyler Adams. It still came down to the second time, knowing that's how they scored the first goal, of saying, well, we should probably block the cutback. It gets cut to the top of the box and they score those things. And so it is moments. While we were outplayed, we were still in it at 1-0. We still had a chance at 1-0. But 2-0, right before half, and the timing of that, it was just like too many boxes were being checked for us to ever come back from, including the fatigue factor of us not rotating the squad throughout the tournament. So overall, is your reflection of this team different in terms of, I know it all came down to this game, right? Walker Zimmerman makes a fatal error in the first game, messes it up. I'm like, these guys might be out because of this, because that's what happens in World Cups. You make the mistake, you might not come back. That team dug deep and got him out of that hole, got into the knockout rounds. Now all is equal. But you're dealing with fatigue because Greg went to the guys that he trusted most and worked out, you know, worked up a lot of minutes on those legs. And you're dealing with all those guys to consistently have that same level of play, which we didn't see in qualifying. We didn't see that. And qualifying is a different world. But we have not seen this team string out multiple performances where we go, okay, this is the new standard. We've seen them have high highs, lows. We've had them seen like that inconsistency that most national teams have because they're rarely playing together. So do you feel differently now, giving yourself a few days? And by the way, the second question on that, do you think we're at risk of looking at Japan and going, man, look at Japan. They fight, the passion, the fight, the discipline, all these things that makes them so good. Let's play like them. And then you look at Spain, you go, oh, tiki-taki, let's do what they do because that's working. Like everybody's finding something that works for them, and I feel like we're close to something but still don't have that. This is who the U.S. is. This is how the U.S. plays. This is what makes them good. These are the things that make them effective. I feel like we're still kind of cherry-picking a lot of things and trying to blend that into an identity.
Well, I can tell you one thing. We have what it takes to be the most athletic team and defend and run and outwork teams. We have that. Other countries don't have what we have in terms of athleticism. They dream of having a pool that we have. And then I think we've gotten to a point where we can play tiki-taka. So I think it's a combination. You don't rely on one or the other. I think it depends on the flow of the game too. If you're playing against Brazil, you're never going to out tiki-taka Brazil. That's just not going to happen. You're playing against Sweden or Finland or Norway, you have the ability to out tiki-taka them. So it just like every game, you look at who you're playing, you come to a game plan, a tactical game plan, whether you're going to outplay them. And there's also times within the game that the momentum changes. And maybe Brazil has to sit back and you can connect passes and build and make them chase. So I think for me, this group, after watching them play four games, I feel that there are so many pieces that we have, so many pieces to make us a legit contender in 2026. And I look at Yunus Musah, I look at Tyler Adams in particular. There's a lot of hope and upside with Gio Reyna, and you hope that everything clicks for him in terms of health, but also his attitude and making sure it's a much more positive one, not one that you see him taking away from the group and throwing the hands up and all that. Mm-hmm. So I look at Anthony Robinson as a left back, and you have Inter Milan interested in him. Serginho Dest on the right, I think he had a phenomenal tournament, the best we've seen him play on both sides of the ball. So he was constantly active, good runs. So Matt Turner in goal, he'll be 32 for the next World Cup. There are so many positives. We're still lacking a nine. No one has come up and said, I'm the nine that you can rely on. I'm going to score goals. I can play the tiki-taka. I can play the keep the ball, and I can also play the work rate and defend for the team and set the press. We have some guys who Josh Sargent has shown some potential. Ricardo Pepi has shown some potential, but that's still a big glaring miss for us right now. And I think you look at the games, you're like, man, if we had a nine, if we had a proper nine, someone on the level of Tyler Adams, Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Weston McKennie, Yunus Musah, a nine like that, a dynamic nine who you could rely on, we beat the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Regardless of how their tactics were, because even Louis van Gaal said, we played like crap in that first half. We got lucky on the break twice, but we played like crap. On a good team, you're coming out of that half, even if they've scored two, maybe it's 3-2, right? It's one of those things where we outplayed them in that first half. We were naive because we didn't think to work against the counter and make sure to neutralize the transition game. But ultimately, if we had a nine, I think we beat the Netherlands.
I don't disagree with you either. And again, like you said, it's not like Depay is a big start. Cody Gakpo is a massive start. Everybody wants him now, right? And he's shown that. He's had that breakout this season, and he's had this breakout now in the World Cup, and that's a huge, huge deal. But Memphis Depay doesn't have like a club record that's outrageous in terms of being a top player scoring at the biggest clubs in the world. He was on that trajectory, but never really lived up to that. And when I think about our striker, we do need somebody that's even at that level that is in and out of the biggest clubs and playing well and scoring goals and capable of scoring goals. If you're going to put them in good positions, they can score. And I think we are missing that as a major piece. Obviously, that's a huge piece. I think we're going to have to see out our center backs as well, because we've got Chris Richards in the pipeline. We've got Cameron Carter-Vickers is still young enough. We've got Mark McKenzie still young enough. You've got Austin Trusty. Yeah, you've got Richards. You've got Eric Palmer-Brown.
Miles Robinson, Eric Palmer-Brown.
I still Robinson as well. There's those players, but we're going to need more, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hyped about a Taylor Booth. Watching him play right now in Holland, winning player of the month in that league, he just looks dynamic. I'm excited about how he can grow and see how he can incorporate into this this midfield group. Just a dynamic look, because, you know, MMA, we love their work rate, how much ground they can cover, how they can just dominate a game in terms of winning tackles and getting it forward. But in terms of creativity and dribbling and having different, you know, Tyler Adams, win the ball, simple, get it off his foot, good. Yunus Musa, good in dribbling. I think if he had another partner, if Weston McKennie wasn't, you know, always pushing it to be at his best, to have another look at someone who could be a little bit more of a connector between the nine and the midfield, someone who could, you know, really push forward. I hope we see more players like that develop.
Yeah. And by the way, that test is going to happen over the next few years, right? When we look at last year, when we set the record for players playing in the Champions League, that was a huge deal for us. And we can talk about that now and that they're young and blah, blah, blah. But that's the new normal. Let's not forget that when Clint Dempsey went to Spurs or Michael Bradley went to Roma, these were guys at the peak of their careers, and they were fighting for just any field time, you know, to get there. Now we've got guys 19, 18, 20, 21 that are at Champions League clubs. And by the way, support the show by making sure you have that subscription to Paramount Plus if you don't already. I got a subscription. It's where all the players are playing from the U.S. men's national team as well as beyond. You can hit that little QR code up in the corner of this show if you're watching this visually to get the P Plus offer. That is all year, and that gets you a 50% discount off of a year-long subscription for Paramount Plus. So make sure you do that and get a chance to support these guys, because we got a long ways to go. We need these players playing in big clubs, pushing themselves.
Huge clubs. I'll tell you this. Yeah. There's a YouTube comment from Ilias McAlalot. McAlalot, I think I got it right. He says, Charlie, why not a 4-4-2 diamond with Adams at the anchor as a six and then Musa McKennie as a diamond midfield, but they're tucked in, similar to how the Philadelphia Union played for a while with Gio as the 10. And then that would force Christian Pulisic to be a striker in the 4-4-2 system, playing with somebody, whether that's Josh Sargent, Pifo, Pepe, whoever it is at the moment. I love that idea. I love that idea, because you get your width from your outside backs. Maybe it's Tim Weah and Pulisic, whoever that is. But yeah, I would love to see that. I'm not married to this system either. I mean, I think that's where you can get creative too, to change the formation and see how these players respond. You have a number of talented players, so make some tweaks. Now is the time. You have 4 years to figure it out. 4-4-2 diamond. A 3-5-2, you know, you have an opportunity to really try and figure out the way to get your most talented players on the pitch.
Charlie, we're going to take our first and only break of the show. When we come back, we actually have some really good questions about which guys impressed to go to bigger clubs in this tournament, which I think is a really important thing, because who impressed and what clubs are interested in them might not align with where the U.S. sort of crapped out in the tournament. So we're going to discuss that and so much more right after this break.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Yes, the soccer world's eyes are focused on Qatar for the biggest event on the global stage. Stay up to date with every story and every heart-pounding moment with the Golazo Starting 11 newsletter from CBS Sports. It's your ultimate guide to the beautiful game, taking you beyond the pitch and around the globe with expert analysis of everything you need to know in the world of soccer. So sign up today for free at cbssports.com/GOLAZO. It's the Golazo Starting 11 newsletter, and you can find it there and stay up to date on everything. Charlie, we are back onto the show again. Now, I know we want to talk about CONCACAF in general because I think it's really important for us to cover the entire region because guess what? The World Cup is in our region, and it's not just the U.S. It's Canada and Mexico as well, and there's going to be more teams than ever before, so we're going to have to get real comfortable with having more than four teams in a World Cup as well as other teams that are going to be coming through and where they're at on their trajectory of development. But before we get into those CONCACAF stories and sort of looking back on managerial changes, player changes, and where those teams are at. Looking at this tournament, a lot of our players are being linked to bigger clubs. Mm-hmm. And I know everyone wants to be like, well, how can they be linked to bigger clubs? They lost in the round of 16. Those guys suck, you know, or those guys were inconsistent. These guys proved against certain teams and certain players, specifically England, that they can compete. Now, anybody can be the best on one day. Anybody can have a great game. You can see somebody have their shining moment on the world's biggest stage in a World Cup. If you can play at most levels of the professional game, you could probably have a good game in a World Cup. One or a half that gets people interested in you. But to compete like that against some of the world's best players, most highly paid players, you know, the England national team is not what England was some time ago. These are players that play in their clubs. They're the biggest clubs in the world. And they're massive stars. And so who do you think within this team's stock is increasing to go to a bigger club? Now, separate that from club form, because I want us to talk just about this World Cup. Because if you're a technical director, you're watching them at the club level going, you know, they're young. There's some potential there. I want to see them on a bigger stage. And then you see them against England. Who to you is stock has increased and made them ready or more capable of going to a bigger club in the near future?
Man, I think Christian Pulisic, yeah. His stock went up, and you know, for Chelsea, they've always looked at him as kind of a luxury, somebody who is in the rotation, not somebody who they're going to start and play and build and be the guy. So I think stock way up. I think Timothy Weah stock way up. I think Yunus Musah stock way up, and those three in particular. I think Tyler Adams, yes, he went to Leeds United. He's proving himself. He's playing every game. Remember when there was all these questions about his health? Not anymore. How much ground he covered, the tackles, how important he was. I mean, I think it's...
Who's that you just mentioned?
Tyler Adams.
Yeah.
Just a gamer and just an incredible captain. So we don't have to worry about a captain or a leader for the next 4 years. I think Sergiño Dest stock went up. And
I still don't think Milan's the right club for him. I think that's a tough thing for a young guy because you're making so much money that you want to make as close to a lateral or vertical move as possible. And they've just got so much depth that it's going to be hurtful. But hopefully this has increased the interest in him when the window opens for him to find the right place. Because he was another one that I was just like, man, will he always be like the potential that we hope he can be because he's got nasty feet, or can he do it consistent? He was one that I was like, start him every game.
I would say this though, what's not to say that his move to AC Milan has helped him to be at this level?
Because I don't disagree with that move for sure.
So I just hope that he gets more playing time at Milan. With that being said, but there is a lot of players that took a positive step more so than a negative step, into almost to a detriment, because we had to heavily rely on them. No rotation. Yeah. We didn't have much depth. And I think when you look at the roster, it was almost as if Greg was going into it with, I'm only going to use these 14 players or so.
Yeah.
I'm going to depend on these 14 players, and the rest is just brought in to make the group strong and fill a void into training and kind of being there. But there are some players that you knew weren't going to play, and those spots could have been used by somebody who could actually make an impact if you had to go to plan B, right, or plan C, which we needed to do in the Netherlands game.
Yeah. So thinking about attackers, you know, Josh Sargent, did his stock increase on the club stage? When I think about Timo Weah, did his stock increase? Because
yes,
it's really hard to isolate these guys from their club form, right, at times, because you go, well, I know Sergio Des is probably going to go back and not play, or I know Christian Pulisic, but we're talking about opportunities where clubs have now been able to say, this person's going to cost a lot of money. I haven't seen it yet because maybe their club situation isn't great. But now they've proven that they can compete. They've shown the upside that they have. And when you think about the potential of this young squad, what was it, the second youngest squad in the World Cup? When you talk about the potential of this group, it's incredible, you know. And now they've got to go for 12 months of the year or 11 months of the year and prove that at the club level to continue growing, because that's where the real growth is going to happen. It's just, I think this World Cup has shown that this isn't just like a gimmick, or that it's not hopeful. Like, we've got some absolute ballers in this national team in a way that this national team has never had, and at an age that we've never even gotten close to.
Yeah, I'm curious where you think our defensive players lie right now in terms of upside for the next cycle. Who do you see staying? Who do you see moving? And who impressed you with their defensive performance in this World Cup?
Sergiño Dest was great. I think Weston McKennie is going to be the player that I think he's going to be, which is super, super crucial to the national team, but more in the vein of your Jermaine Jones, Michael Bradley, consistent workhorse fighter. I don't know if he has the super, super upside. Having said that, he's a starter at Juventus, right? Like, this is a massive, massive deal. But I saw, like, star power. I saw star potential in him that I'm not necessarily seeing as, like, the star of our national team, right? But I think he's a Champions League player, and he's a Champions League consistent Champions League player. But when I think about the defense, I don't see much upside with Walker Zimmerman. You know, I could see him getting in at a lower half Premier League club and using his assets physically to do well there. But that's not really where my interests lie.
Nashville.
I think Robinson has upside. I still worry about the things in his game that I am critical of, I think can be developed, right? Picking and choosing the moments to go forward. But his willingness to go forward, his willingness to track back, his willingness to defend hard, those are all unbelievable baselines, right? And now you can actually, if he can get in the right place that they're going to hone and shape, not to say he's not doing that at Fulham, because for sure he is, to be more clinical in his crosses, to be better in his passing, to pick and choose his moments of when to have a change of speed and when to slow the game down a little bit. Those are all things that I think are going to make him even better. Then I think about Chris Richards, and I think about Robinson, the center backs. I think about Mark McKenzie, who's in an unbelievable run of form right now. We haven't seen that performance for the national team, so I still think that there's a little bit of a gap there. In the same way that I talked about Cameron Carter-Vickers or Eric Palmer-Brown, where there's still that, like, almost like they want to earn their stripes and they want to prove themselves, but they haven't really figured out, like, how do I take the national team? How do I take my club form and then do it at the national team level? And that's a big difference, right? There were lots of times that I was in the national team where I was like, I'm nowhere near who I am when I'm with my club. I'm nowhere near as comfortable. Maybe the game's a little too fast, or maybe I just feel a little insecure. And I think there's a gap there.
Looking for me or playing to my strengths.
The game's faster. Guys, yeah, exactly. Like, you don't have the same rhythm of things, like all of that type of stuff. And it does have a little bit of that dog-eat-dog at times when you're in the national team, even though it is that brotherhood on the men's side for sure. But when I think about those guys, there's a lot of upside left in them. And then Austin Trusty, who's proven to be taking pretty big leaps and bounds in terms of his development. Mm-hmm. I think there is a new belief, if you're a player that's 17, 18 right now, that you can get into the national team. at 19 after being a pro for 1 year, or 20 after two years of being a pro, or that you can have a Brendan Aaronson trajectory if you're a defender. And so I'm looking to the future of our national teams, the 17s, the 18s, the 20s, to see who's going to be the next player. And I think we should have an episode soon on who is coming through the pipeline, your Kevin Paredes, your other players that are going to bolster up and really make us a more dynamic type of national team. And again, having bigger players playing at bigger clubs. I mean, what's your thought on the defense as well?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Serginho Dest and Nancy Robinson will be there for the next cycle. Chris Richards, I think, will be there for the next cycle as long as he can get healthy and find playing time. I think this year was always about growth and adapting, and then you hope that under Patrick Vieira, he finds time and is able to play. Austin Trusty has been awesome with Birmingham. Can he convert that into a move with Arsenal, or at least staying with Arsenal, getting playing time, being on the depth chart, or getting loaned to a first team in a different league, in the Bundesliga, in Belgium, in Denmark, somewhere where he's going to play consistently on a first team, and maybe in Europe? I think that would be beneficial for him. But
By the way, this is a complete side note, but I don't want to forget. Do you think Florin Balogun could have been the nine for us in this tournament, like the nine that we hope to have? I mean, he's in the top three or four in the French league right now for goals.
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to see him first with the group, so I couldn't say he would have been the answer. You know, he has quality, better than our depth pieces, that's for sure. Would he have been able to fill the void that we needed in terms of a nine who's going to be consistent and a threat and score goals? I don't know, but I do know what he possesses. It's more than what we had in our depth chart. So I saw a comment from Keyshawn. What about Daryl Dike? What does he have to do? He has to work on his first touch. His first touch isn't international quality yet. I know I was really hyped. I watched him in college. I watched him in MLS in his first couple of years with Orlando City. He makes that move to the championship and just scores goals for fun. But he needs to work on his first touch. His first touch let him down. And if you saw him in the Gold Cup, his performance in the Gold Cup, it wasn't at the standard you need. But that's not to say he can't get there. So as long as he can just continues to work on his first touch, I think his movement is good and his finishing has drastically improved. But that first touch is key. Holding up the ball and when players play into your feet, once he does that, then he can be effective with the national team.
I like that. I like that. Well, let's talk a little bit about CONCACAF then, right? Because U.S. were the only team in CONCACAF to get out of the group stages. Not a great look for CONCACAF, especially as we're going into hosting this next World Cup. Obviously, Tata Martino out. Costa Rica and Canada failed to advance. Costa Rica had some sniffs of it on the final day, going up 2-1, about to send Spain and Germany out of the tournament, but just not strong enough. And I would look at the ranking of this of Costa Rica was like an any given Sunday type of thing, right? If they were going to get out with the team that they had, the players that they had, and the levels that they were playing, it was going to have to all come together consistently. They were very close to that. But I wouldn't say that the quality that they have consistently in terms of potential, like they're at the end of a cycle, And I think they were past the end of that cycle and hadn't been able to regenerate the new players in that cycle. But then when I look at Canada, I think they were extremely naive because what I saw from them against Belgium, what I saw from them in the start against Croatia, they were running on teams the same way that we saw in CONCACAF, where you're like, dude, these guys can run the wings. They run at speed. They're very, very hard to stop, whether it was Eustaquia or others in the midfield controlling the flow of the game. The defense that we've criticized, not criticized, but we were always questioning because we're like, these are all just like MLS defenders. And they were rotating them every qualifier, and they were just getting shutout after shutout because they were so disciplined. Just got absolutely ran over in the second and third games of this tournament. And then finally for Mexico, the upside that I'd say for Mexico, and I say this for the region, not because I'm a Mexico fan, but we need Mexico to do well and for our region, is that there are players having the same conversations about players that played in this World Cup that big clubs in Europe want now. And Mexico doesn't have big players playing in big clubs in Europe right now. And they need that. We need those players in our region going abroad and challenging themselves outside of our domestic leagues. I think domestic leagues are super important. But that's sort of my take on that. Give me your take of just like the 3-4 teams, whether it's managerial changes, if you think they should have them, your take on their World Cup performances and where you think things are going to go.
Well, I think Costa Rica, just they're all old. They're aging out. It's the changing of the guard. And in 4 years' time, they're going to lose Keylor Navas. You know, you certainly are going to lose Cecil Borges. And I just feel
Joel
like
Campbell's
that,
probably going to be out
Joel,
by then.
Joel Campbell's 30, so he's 34. I just think they're not going to be as strong as we've seen in CONCACAF. Mexico, on the other hand, they don't have the quality coming through like we do. Mm-hmm. They should be praying.
Well, we're miles ahead with that.
We're two, three years
into that development in Europe.
Them for the next 4 years. And then Canada, I think Canada is the one that has probably were humbled quite a bit in this tournament because they came in just like their coach, cocky as hell. Yeah, they're super talented and they're fearless, but they were a little cocky. They're on the side of being naive and everyone's gonna have to adjust.
Well, I mean, they were loud in qualifying too. If you think about it, it's hard not to be, right? Because you've been screaming at the top of your lungs at the mountaintop trying to get people to hear you, and then finally you sweep through qualifying and people are like, yeah, exactly. We've been doing this all along. No one's been paying attention. And you're like, well, you don't even make the final round of qualifying usually. But now you got this team talented, I think, by and large, because the MLS has pumped a bunch of money into it, or the teams have pumped money into their academies, developing players, providing outputs. You've got the Canadian Premier League. You've just got this growing soccer audience, and then you've got the soccer culture there. That's phenomenal. But I agree with you. There was a little piece of humble pie that came with that little thin gray area between like confident and arrogant. I think they leaned a little too far into that. And you know, and within one moment, up. We found ourselves out on it too. Yeah. But like, you get smacked. Yeah.
But I think they're going to be better for it. So I think Canada, you know, like Alistair Johnston just got to move to Celtic. So, you know, you look at the options that they have. They're all young. It's a country that's growing tremendously in prospects. The sport is popular in Canada. Everyone's behind this World Cup. They're going to be a force. I think this World Cup and getting that experience and getting smacked up is definitely going to help them in 2026. So they are going to be, I think for us, that's 1 and 2. I honestly think it's going to be us in Canada competing to be the top CONCACAF team. I think Mexico, they're off it right now.
Yeah. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
No, sorry, go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, looking at this, are the U.S. way out in front of CONCACAF of everyone, right? Because remember all the criticisms that came in, where the U.S. finished in qualifying, we barely qualified, we didn't, Canada running away at the top, Mexico were better than us, and blah, 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 blah. But, again, trophies, getting out of the group stages as the normal for the U.S. Do you think the U.S. is still way out in front of the other nations in terms of where things are at? Because when push comes to shove, you know, the U.S. qualified. Yeah, we didn't qualify on top like we had hoped. We got out of the group stages of a tough group. Yeah, not as tough as probably Mexico and Belgium's group. But those are incremental steps. Now they're disappointing to us because we wanted to get to the quarterfinals. But do you think all of that put together suggests that the U.S. is way out ahead of CONCACAF right now in terms of the players we have and the fact that we're getting performances with those players?
Yeah, I would say it's we're definitely not way out in front. So I would say that we're still a work in progress because we're still working on a lot of things. Trust me, there's some positives. We've come together. We've got some core guys in this group, but we don't know what the future looks like. Who's going to be the coach? Is Greg staying on? Are they giving him another opportunity? Does he want to stay? If he says I'm out, who's the target? Because I don't think you can necessarily just say done and then not have a coach for a year if the right candidate doesn't present itself. So I think that's something U.S. soccer is going to have to do. Ernie Stewart in particular is saying, who's going to take us to the next level? Where is that person? Who is that person? And how do we get him to be a part of this project? I think it's such a desirable project. I don't see how too many coaches would turn it down because it's here. You have 48 teams. It's all this buzz. America has all these options and talented players and exciting players. So it's an incredible opportunity, whoever would get that chance to lead the way. But I think if you don't go with Greg, then I think you need to go with someone who has had experience coaching and into the international stage in a World Cup and has got a good sense of how to develop talent and get this young team to play a certain way, to get the most out of this talented group of players. That for me is most important.
Well, that's well said, Charlie. And
that's my final thought.
I like that. I'm gonna count that as your final thought. But what I want everybody to do that's still watching and or listening to the show, let us know what you want these episodes to be about. Now that we got a little time to dissect, you want us to go player by player or line by line entire episodes? We can do a whole episode on Greg Berhalter if you want. Those are the types of things that we're gonna now have the ability to do with the unfortunate fact that we're out of the tournament. And we got a long ways to go. We want to keep this show going. So, of course, let us know in the comments on the show or leave us a rating and review and just let us know something you want to hear. Ask questions, and we'll make sure we get to those. And by the way, if you're listening to this on CBSSports.com, we want to let you know that you can subscribe to our YouTube channel or our podcast by simply searching In Soccer We Trust. We are available on all podcast platforms and we'll deliver world-class soccer coverage during this World Cup and beyond. So go find us if you like what you are hearing. So, of course, on behalf of myself, Charlie Chuck Wagon Davies, our production team, CBS Sports, and everybody at home or wherever you are that are listening and are watching, we appreciate all of you, and we will see you guys next show.
Hey, everyone. This is Jimmy Conrad, your favorite former U.S. Men's National Team player and the host of the Call It What You Want podcast. And I'm here to tell you that Vuori is a versatile clothing brand that speaks my language. It's inspired from the coastal California lifestyle, just like me. Its products stand the test of time, just like me. And also just like me, it endeavors to inspire others to live vibrant, healthy lives. Vuori gear is designed to look great in everyday life while also being perfect for any workout activity. I'm currently rocking the men's Sunday performance jogger, and don't let the name deceive you. You can wear these babies any day of the week and in any situation. I'm talking going to the office, running errands, the gym, whatever your heart desires, because Vuori is an investment in your happiness. For our listeners, they are offering 20% off your first purchase. So get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet at Vuori.com/sports. That's Vuori.com/sports. Not only will you receive 20% off your first purchase, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75 and free returns. Again, go to Vuori.com/sports and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.